The Institute of Child Nutrition is proud to present iBites. Here you will learn about all aspects of child nutrition programs, from research to resources, from oral histories to best practices. Each iBites episode features a wealth of information to help promote the continuous improvement of child nutrition programs. I'm Dr. LaWanda Morse, the Associate Director of Grants at the Institute of Child Nutrition, and I will be your host. Today we have a guest with us who is an employee staffer here at the Institute. His name is John Wall. John, thank you for joining us. John is a library specialist, or the library specialist here at the Institute. I believe you're our only one. The only one. John is going to share with us some unique items that he's brought up from the Child Nutrition Archives. And let's just start with John telling us what you do as the library specialist here at the Institute.
Well, I work with archival collections, processing. Also, I work with the Clearinghouse Library and Resources. We have just a small research library here that it operates like a regular library, where you check out, where staff members are working on resources will check out books or items and they can use. And like I said, it's just like a regular library. Down in the Child Nutrition Archives, we have a variety of collections, about 98 manuscript collections.
Wow.
And then we've got over 30 photograph collections.
John, where do those collections come from?
They come from donations. Usually people who have been in the child nutrition field from the state agencies, also USDA, on down to the school cafeteria managers across the nation.
That's awesome.
Just from Maine to California, Washington, just all over. And then also the territories.
Do you know offhand what's the oldest artifact that you have?
That would probably be the USDA yearbook. I think we got about two. They date back to the 1890s.
So besides the manuscripts and the photographs, and I know we have the photographs, some of them throughout the building.
And just another thing about the photographs, we have over 2,700 images. Another thing, a lot of them, most of them have been posted online, and they're available through our website, and you can take a look at them, download them for educational purposes. And so that's one of our neat aspects of working here is that we've got, as you mentioned, the photographs, a bunch of them have been blown up. We've got them around the building. Adds a real neat touch to the building.
Where on the website, do you know offhand where we could send our listeners to see those pictures?
There's a photograph ICN website, and go to the archives link, and then there'll be a link to the photos.
Oh, that's great. I've browsed some of them, and I must say it's so amazing to see how things have changed over the decades of the child nutrition programs. What else do we have?
We also have oral history interviews. People tell their experience through the years working in the child nutrition field. Matter of fact, the archivist, Jeffrey Boyce, conducted a lot of interviews over the years. There's a good number of them that are posted on the web.
And they can access those and hear those as well, correct?
Mm-hmm. I think since the Institute been conducting the interviews, there are over 200 oral histories.
That's amazing. So you really get that firsthand account of what people have experienced and what they've seen with the child nutrition programs. That's great. So tell us about some of our items that you brought.
Okay. Back a couple weeks ago, we had a staff meeting, and that Monday was, and of all things, I didn't know this until I think I went to the SNA website, was National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day.
Who knew there was such a thing?
There's also a National Hamburger Day or Hamburger Month, too. Previously, I had seen this neat episode. The cooking channel has a just a real. I think it ran something like for just three seasons, but it was a neat show called Food Factor Fiction, hosted by comic actor Michael McKean.
Okay, I don't believe I ever saw that one.
And it's just a half hour topic based show. And in season two, there was an episode called Power Couples.
Okay.
And it was things like chicken and waffles. And then one of the items that they covered was the history of the merging of peanut butter and jelly. And so I thought that was really neat. And then when I saw the SNA. The SNA comment that it was peanut butter and jelly week. Put together just a couple items, related to that to present. We have a archives moment during our meetings, show and tell.
Right.
And so I looked back at the Power Couples episode, but then I, of course, being a historian, and what my background is, I wound up expanding on that by going to the food history timeline, and then or the food timeline website. And then also we've got some old topic research help desk files different types of foods, different issues with food, and in the general child nutrition management field. And so I started looking through there, and also Wikipedia.
Right.
And so I put together just a brief presentation, but then pulled from our collections items related to peanut butter and jelly being served in schools. And so one of the things that didn't realize that really peanut butter and jelly became popular, especially in schools, like after World War II.
Okay.
And so we have a Vermont, Vermont school lunch programs menu book. We actually have two of them. And they're in two different collections. One is in the Vermont Child Nutrition Programs collection, and it's actually dated 1945. And then we've got a rare book collection that has the same book, but 1951. And so the 1945 book doesn't, it lists sandwiches, but it talks about things like egg. Let's see, get my papers here. No, excuse me. 1946. And it talks about serving egg salad sandwiches, cottage cheese sandwiches. But then by 1951, it expands, and there's a peanut butter and marmalade sandwich.
Okay.
And so, you know, so it's like they didn't readily have regular grape jelly on sandwiches in schools in Vermont until probably much later.
Right. So I'm intrigued by the information that you shared with us on peanut butter and jelly. So could you share some of that with us?
Mm-hmm. Peanut butter. When it really became popular, it was considered a luxury food.
Oh, and that is hilarious, because now my children, if I offer them peanut butter, you know, we're not doing so great that month. Like we're dragging for some quarters or something. So it's definitely not, it definitely has declined in its fame, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, originally it was also considered a health food by Dr. John Harvey Kellogg.
Interesting.
And then later it was presented in the World's Fair of 1904 World's Fair as a gourmet food, as I mentioned, and then when the boll weevil hit in the southern cotton crops,
that's a bad word in Mississippi.
And the scientist inventor George Washington Carver, he came up with various ideas for peanuts, the usage, and promoted peanuts, and so it was he actively promoted the usage of peanut butter as a meat alternative, especially during the, and of course with the, you had falling on the heels of that the heavy industrial commercialization of peanut butter.
Okay, so now for us non-historians, give us kind of help us out with the timeline of where World War II, George Washington Carver, how did all that fit timeline wise?
Well, of course, I think the boll weevil hit before the Great Depression, or about during the Great Depression. I would have to get back on that.
Okay.
And then,
Depression was in the 20s, right?
Late 20s.
Okay. So that gives us a good idea of the time frame we're talking about.
Right.
Okay.
And then jelly had been known, the process of making jelly had been known for a long time to the ancients, but it was popular in the medieval and then Renaissance way of preserving fruit. It would have been used by the conquistadors coming into Mexico and the southern U.S. and in South America. Of course, the peanut, getting back to the peanut just briefly, the peanut was cultivated in South America thousands of years ago. But Dr. Thomas Welch developed in 1918 a grapeade spread, and it just happened that of course that was during America's time in World War I, and so the army bought up grapeade in great quantities during that time.
Interesting.
And then of course later you had bread, throw in the bread component. In the 1920s, you had the invention of the automated bread slicer, and so you had the bread was cut and then held together with long hat pins, or the equivalent of hat pins.
Okay.
And then eventually it was wrapped in wax paper. And then GIs sailors and ships and military mess halls were supplied with sliced bread, peanut butter, and the equivalent of the Dr. Welch's grapeade in World War II. And so that just merged all together.
And we are so thankful it did.
Yeah.
To me, there's nothing better. And now I'm a little strange here. I warm my peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Hmm. Have you ever done that?
I haven't.
So I put my peanut butter down on both sides because you don't want your jelly to leak through.
Oh.
And then I put my jelly on top and I close my sandwich up. Then you heat it in the microwave for about 15 to 20 seconds. And that peanut butter gets real smooth and begins to melt, and it's delicious, John. With a good old glass of milk, I'm telling you.
Now, actually, I am partial to the idea of the 1951 Vermont menu of peanut butter and marmalade for some odd reason. Well, I guess because I'm a marmalade fan.
I've got some other items, and I thought what we'll do after the podcast is I'll have our IT folks help me out, get some pictures of those items and post them so that our listeners can see the items that you've brought. I see you've got a couple of other menus. And
well, I brought the front cover and a scan page. Both are scan of a menu book from the Mississippi State Department of Education, Jackson, Mississippi, but it was actually used in the Starkville School District. It was a menu book.
One of the things you mentioned was how peanut butter and jelly, or I believe jelly specifically, you said, was used during ancient times, goes back to the medieval times. One of the resources I know you've worked on in the past were some historical food curriculum sheets. Tell us a little bit about those.
They're posted on a website. They're four time periods, foods from the Roman period, the Renaissance, the American Revolution, and the American Civil War. And although it's not specifically even though they're not specifically targeted for specific class or grade, the teacher can take a look at those, glean facts, information, and then also they can consult with cafeteria managers in preparing USDA foods that are related to that time period.
You know, I think it'd be a great way for the classroom teachers and the staff that's in the child nutrition program to coordinate together. Anybody could take that information and go in and help out in the classroom. So it'd be a great resource for child nutrition professionals to go into the classroom and let the children see that, you know, they don't live in the cafeteria and that they do have a wealth of knowledge and be a great resource for the classroom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Getting back to the Starkville.
Sorry, we got sidetracked.
the Starkville menu book. It is from 1967 through 68.
Okay.
And then, like I said, in the page I have here, actually. On Fridays is when peanut butter and jelly is served, and it's either a choice of pimento and cheese sandwich or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with beef and vegetable soup.
Oh, that sounds so good. Well, John, you have shared. I enjoyed hearing about peanut butter and jelly. I think we should, each time we have a special day or a special week, have you come and tell us about it, because you have the artifacts to back it up, and then you have the historical knowledge. So I think it's a great resource to share with our listeners.
Absolutely. In our building, within the Institute of Child Nutrition building, we have displays that we've got two display cases in the foyer cove. And one of those displays cases usually has something relevant to that month, or if there's a special day or week in a month, and it's changed out bi-monthly, and so it's like if you visit here, us at the Institute, take a look in the cases in the foyer.
Absolutely. There's a wealth of artifacts throughout our building. The archives department does a great job keeping those items out where we can see them, switching them out so we see different things, and like you mentioned, then sharing at our staff meeting so that we as ICN staff have an awareness of what we have on hand. Mm-hmm. So is there anything you'd like to share before we wrap up?
One other little item. This found a little brochure, and this ties in with those fact sheets, although this modern food kind of imposed on a colonial theme imposed on modern food. It was a brochure from the Stan Garnett collection, a brochure that came from the 1970s bicentennial. Where schools were encouraged to participate in the celebration of America's 200th anniversary. And so we have a bicentennial brochure. It's done up in colonial style with woodcuts and Lucinda calligraphy titles. Bicentennial breakfast menus, and matter of fact, they have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches listed, and it is listed as log cabins.
Oh, interesting.
And it was served with Minuteman milk. And this came from the Stan Garnett collection. He worked with Peace Corps. He was a USDA director of child nutrition programs. And he was also worked with the Catholic Relief Services. And
awesome.
We have his collection there in archives.
Well,
one of our very, very neat collections.
Awesome. Well, there's a wealth of stuff down there. I've been here, this starts my fifth year, and I feel like I've just barely seen the tip of the iceberg of all the great resources y'all have.
I've been here since 2011, and it's just a wealth of material.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today, John. And if you happen to be on campus, listeners, or in the Oxford area, we would love to have you stop by the Institute and check out the Child Nutrition Archives. And John will be happy to give you a tour around, or Jeffrey Boyce, who is our archivist, or we also have Ms. Sharon Wall, who is the assistant director over that division. So any of them are down there and will be glad to give you a tour around. We'd love to see you. Thanks again, John.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Tune in next month for more iBites. And until then, remember, there's nothing more important than the health and well-being of our nation's children. This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitten Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-50-9410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.